Welcome to What Matters in North Carolina. It's Friday, and we are excited. We are looking forward to the weekend, but we're also looking forward to talking today about reps. And that's not the number of times your quarterback gets the ball hiked to him. Reps in North Carolina. If you walk around the General Assembly and say reps, you might get a plethora of different reactions. Some folks will look at you funny. Some folks will look at you very excitedly. You see, there's a lot of lobbyists down there, and some of them are advocating for reps. Some of them are advocating against reps. And reps, it's not, number of stripes in your tie. Reps refers to Renewable Energy Portfolio Standards. And in North Carolina, by the way, one of the only states, if not the only state in the entire Southeast, that has Renewable Energy Portfolio Standards. Basically, what it means is that energy providers like Duke have to get some of their electricity from renewable energy sources. Whether they are more expensive, whether they are less expensive, they are mandated by law, courtesy of the former majority in the General Assembly, the Democrats. They have to buy a certain amount of energy from renewable energy sources. That number is increasing, and it goes up, and it will effectively stop in the year 2020 at 12.5%. Now, if you recall, we have talked with, and I have written about at nccapitalconnection.com, Representative Jimmy Dixon has a bill out there that wanted to freeze those renewable energy portfolio standards, I think, at 8.5%. Well, yesterday in the General Assembly, Landon Stevens, and he's with a company called Strata. Strata is a policy company, a policy institute that looks at the effect of energy and environmental policy on states like North Carolina. And Representative Chris Millis was there. Representative Collins also touting House Bill 745, which goes further than Representative Dixon's bill. This would freeze the renewable energy portfolio standard at 6%. And so why is this important? Why do you need to care? Why does this matter in North Carolina? Well, it's all about the money, and it's about money coming out of your pocket and my pocket every time we pay our electricity bill. So let's find out more about reps with Landon Stevens here on What Matters in North Carolina. Joining us now is Landon Stevens, and he is the, he's the man of the hour because just fresh off a press conference Thursday at the North Carolina General Assembly. He's the director of policy with Strata, and Strata is a organization that does a lot of research when it comes to various policies, one of which happens to affect us here in North Carolina, having to do with the renewable portfolio standards, and we're going to talk about that. Landon, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Mark. It's good to be here.
So, Landon, tell us just a little bit, kind of a thumbnail about Strata.
Yeah, so at Strata, we're an energy and environment policy research center. We're actually based in Logan, Utah.
Okay.
And we were out here giving a press conference for some of the work that we've done, looking at how these renewable energy portfolio standards impact the economies of states who choose to adopt them. So right now in the United States, there are 31 states who have these types of policies in place.
And what kind of motivated you to take a look at North Carolina?
Well, actually, what we did is we looked at all of the states across the country that use these types of policies to get a sense of how the average state would respond. That way we could help inform not only states who have these policies, but maybe states who are considering implementation in the future. But overall at Strata, what we try to do is help people make informed decisions about issues that impact the freedom to live their lives. And we feel that in most cases, promoting freely functioning markets is the best way to do that. And so some of the questions around these policies seem to impact how markets respond, and so we wanted to take a look at that.
Well, I think that people who ascribe to a notion of less government interference in our lives and government overreach and mandates and this sort of thing certainly would appreciate the work that you're doing. So yesterday, you and Donald Bryson with Americans for Prosperity and Representative Millis and Representative Collins were at the General Assembly, and you held a press conference, and it had to do with House Bill 785. And actually, that's not the right bill number.
Yeah, I believe it was 745.
House Bill 745. That's right. I was, there we go. House Bill, the North Carolina Energy Ratepayers Protection Act, House Bill 745. And what we heard from you is some interesting statistics and information that are quite mind-boggling, actually, when it comes to how much this great, you know, and I'm putting that in quotes, this great renewable energy sector is for our state. Why don't you give us a rundown of what you shared at the press conference about how much it's actually costing people here in North Carolina to support the renewable energy sector?
Yeah, so what we found when we looked at the 31 states who have these policies is that the average response of an economy leads to about a 14% decrease in electricity sales. But I think the bigger issue here is really with real personal income. So on average, it declines about 3.5%. What that means for North Carolina is that from the time the RPS was implemented until 2013, the state lost about $13.5 billion in real personal income, or about $3,500 per family. So the impacts on these states are not insubstantial. So
now I'm looking at, I get bombarded all the time from the folks that are advocating. And as you know, here in North Carolina, there are a lot of them that are advocating for renewable energy, for the expansion of solar and wind and all that kind of stuff. And they would beg to differ. You know, in fact, what we hear from them all the time is, well, we've created thousands and thousands of jobs. And I think that they would certainly not agree that there has been a cost in real income to folks in North Carolina. So how did you come up with these numbers? Because that's pretty significant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think what the industry is trying to do is look at their specific industry in isolation of the overall economy. So, of course, they've created jobs because they've essentially gone from zero to the industry they are today over the time of the RPS. But what we look at is more of a macroeconomic model. So when you raise the electricity prices and choose to subsidize more costly energy, what you're doing is shifting those costs onto households, but I guess more importantly in the jobs case, to different industries, small businesses, large corporations, which then has trickle-down impacts on jobs. So what you really need to look at is the net job loss of the whole economy versus the creation within the solar and renewable industries themselves.
So, and this may be a little bit more math-centric, Landon, than we need to get into here on a podcast, but, and I don't mean to be slow, but can you explain for those people like me that need a little help understanding, how can you say or can you estimate that there was a certain amount of job loss or real personal income has fallen by, $13.5 billion. What do you start with kind of as a starting point and then say, okay, this is how we come to this number?
Yeah, so one thing that we try to do with this study is look at not so much what the theoretical impacts or forward-looking impacts would be, but we look at the empirical data. So these renewable portfolio standards are really nothing new across the country. In fact, they've been around since as early as the 1980s. And like I said, 31 states now have them.
Uh-huh.
So what this study does, in essence, is looks at when each of those policies in the 31 states began. Again, it covers range from, you know, 1980s till 2009. And then we look backwards, so 4 years from before that those policies started until 4 years after those policies started. And that allows us to look at real numbers and real data of how the average state responds to a shock of an RPS in their state. So, you know, while we don't have the North Carolina specific numbers, we are just saying if North Carolina responded as an average state would, what we would see is that as of last year, North Carolina has about 32,000 fewer jobs in their economy than they would have without a renewable portfolio standard.
Okay.
I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does. And I guess for our listeners, we sort of started talking in industry code here. A renewable energy portfolio standard, correct me if I'm wrong, but that means that the providers of electricity, like Duke specifically here in North Carolina, Dominion, they have to buy a certain amount of their electricity from providers of renewable energy. Is that correct?
Yes. And so I believe in North Carolina right now, as the law stands, that would require that 12.5% of electricity generated in the state would come from these renewable sources by 2021. So
that's a mandate. So if I'm Duke, even if I can generate electricity cheaper through another resource, you know, I'll just make something up, coal or whatever, natural gas, doesn't matter. I've got to buy a certain percentage of my electricity from renewable energy sources, and then I pass that on, obviously, that cost to the consumers.
Exactly. And what's interesting is not only do they require renewable energies to be used in general, but they pick and choose which types of what we would consider renewable energies are chosen. So I think in 2015, about 7% of total electricity generation in North Carolina came from renewables, but more than half of that came from hydropower. And in the way that North Carolina treats renewables for their portfolio standards right now, large-scale hydroelectricity isn't included and doesn't count towards that 12.5%. And so it really, you know, I guess it's something that needs to be considered moving forward, is what counts as a renewable versus what doesn't.
Yeah. Well, the thing that's interesting and makes me scratch my head, and our guest here, we're talking, of course, here on What Matters in North Carolina to Landon Stevens with Strata Policy, and they look at energy and environmental policies and how they impact states, and we're talking about the renewable energy portfolio standard here in North Carolina. Landon, of course, with our good friend Donald Bryson and Representative Millis and Collins, talking about House Bill 745, which would freeze the renewable energy portfolio standard at 6%. Now, even while your press conference was going on yesterday, Landon, the North Carolina Sustainable Energy Association began to put out on social media that, well, I'll just read one of these, for example. Renewable energy portfolio standards has saved customers $162 million since 2007 and will save them an additional $429 million by 2029. Another post on Twitter, clean energy attracts and supports local jobs and investment, now accounting for $6.4 billion in revenues and over 34,000 full-time jobs. So if I'm sitting here and I don't know any better, I would feel like I'm at a tennis match, because on the one hand, the conservatives and folks that look at this, you know, through the lens of cost and efficiency, like you guys, are saying, well, wait a minute, you know, you're costing people jobs, you're costing families real net income. But then on the other side of the net, you know, I've got the North Carolina Sustainable Energy Association saying, oh my gosh, the renewable energy is the greatest thing in the world. Look at all these jobs and all this revenue. So what am I supposed to believe if I'm just the average person out there hearing, you know, two completely different sides of the story?
Yeah. Yeah, and it's definitely an issue that we see all the time. There's competing stories and competing numbers out there. I guess the way we look at it at Strata, and again, I can't comment on the North Carolina specific numbers around the industries, but what I would say is that we look to find what policies that can make the markets most freely functioning, most responsive to natural market signals. And so when we see policies like the Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard, and then what I learned today or yesterday at the press conference is that North Carolina also for a long time had favorable tax policies. They had certain subsidies, and we still have other forms of state and federal intervention propping up one industry over another.
Yeah.
What that tells me is that we're probably missing out on the naturally occurring benefits of a free market,
yeah,
and instead choosing to pick a winner that's based on government favors as opposed to economic reality. So, I mean, I don't want to comment on the numbers specifically because I just wouldn't be in a position to do that. But for me, it's more of the framework of how the economy is running and it, whether or not the government is stepping in to pick those winners and losers.
Well, Landon, you know, the one thing that I don't understand and I have not been able to get a very good answer to is, you know, you drive out into some of the rural areas now where these big solar farms have been built in North Carolina, and you don't hear a sound. You don't see a soul. You just see, you know, all these panels. And while there may have been some jobs, you know, with people pouring concrete and putting these panels into the concrete and hooking up the, you know, the electrical wiring and stuff, I'm not really seeing a big thriving job market in solar or even wind for that matter once these things, you know, start running. I think they have to have somebody back at the station in case the sun doesn't come out, you know, or the wind doesn't blow. And the people they're providing power to, they have to throw a switch so they can get, you know, traditional electricity. But I'm not seeing this big booming, you know, job-creating machine that the renewable energy folks like to say that they are.
Yeah, and I think, again, this would be commenting on one industry over another. But I think looking at it through the lens of just jobs created is kind of a misnomer because, I mean, so would we really say it's better if there's a solar farm out there that is only working 50% of the time because it's dark at night and, you know, some days it's cloudy? Would it be better if there were 2,000 people out there working to produce that amount of energy? I mean, in my perfect world, I think I would rather have a nuclear plant or a natural gas plant that's producing a much larger amount of energy in the same amount of time working with only three people. And so I think if we're looking at it that way, it might be the wrong way to look at it. And that's why you see green energy advocates utilizing this metric of jobs, when I think that's the wrong way to look at it. It should be what's good for the ratepayer, what's good for North Carolina businesses, and what's good for the economy as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah, and I don't know that you need to comment on this, but what I have always felt like is, Landon, is that if these industries are so viable, then why do they need all this government assistance? You know, it was just recently here in North Carolina that we got rid of some of the huge tax favors for tax credits, and it just seems like, okay, you know, you tout yourself renewable sector as such a wonderful, you know, part of the economy that can create jobs and make money. Well, then you shouldn't be needing all this, you know, you shouldn't need a renewable energy portfolio standard. You should just stand on your own. That's my thought.
Yeah, and that's definitely the mindset that we have. Like I said, at Strata, we definitely like to promote freely functioning markets. And so ideally, we would see an economy working where nobody was being given incentives one way or another, but the market was just deciding. Now, I think where lawmakers have a tough job is they're balancing competing priorities, right? So in this case, you'll have one constituent that is arguing perhaps that increasing the amount of renewables is supplying an environmental impact that can't be captured in economic numbers, you know, and that's something that needs to be discussed. But overall, I think markets are very effective at allocating resources where it's most beneficial for the largest number of people as a whole.
So, Landon, one final question: this House Bill 745, going to freeze the renewable energy portfolio standard at 6%. Would you advocate, in a perfect world, to have it at 0%?
I don't know what the perfect number would be. I would think that there is some natural demand for renewables that would occur naturally without a mandate. And I think as prices continue to drop, which they have been over time, you may see more adoption of wind and solar technologies naturally, especially once battery technology is expanded and becomes more cost-effective. Mm-hmm. My home state, for instance, I grew up in Arizona, and I would argue that in the near future, households may have their own solar panels with batteries and could run fairly independent of a grid altogether in the not-so-far future, with no subsidies and no mandates at all.
Wow.
So I think ideally the free market is the best way to go about it. With this bill and with North Carolina in particular, I couldn't comment on that. But I think people should have more faith in their technologies and kind of let them grow and develop to be competitive in the marketplace.
Yeah, well, I think that's a good statement. We'll leave it right there. Landon, thank you very much. Very informative. We appreciate the work that you are doing and the Strata is doing to analyze environmental and energy policy and make sure folks are getting, you know, the most out of their taxpayer dollars. So keep up the good work. Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you so much, Mark.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Well, joining us now on What Matters in North Carolina, kind of wrap up this issue of renewable energy portfolio standards, after we talked with Landon Stevens, there is Donald Bryson. He is the State Director of Americans for Prosperity here in North Carolina. Donald, welcome back as always.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's always fun.
Well, it was nice seeing you at the press conference along with Representative Millis and Representative Collins. And one of the things I just kind of wanted to clarify is that we hear from the solar folks and the renewable energy folks, Donald, about how many jobs that they've made, how much money they've made. And yet here we have, you know, Landon Stevens from Strata telling us, well, you know, we've done these studies and found that there were personal income losses, job losses. And so really, where do we kind of, how do we get out of the haze of the smoke that comes from both sides to really understanding what's going on here?
Yeah, so the energy issue in North Carolina is like a really ugly onion, and there are a lot of layers to it. So you have to think about this in context. So you have the renewable energy industry saying, hey, we're bringing in a lot of money and a lot of jobs into the state, okay?
Right.
Well, I don't deny that, but let's talk through why they're able to do that. Since 2007, they've had a mandate so that the utility companies and thereby the ratepayers have to buy increasing amounts of their product, have to, by law, buy more and more of their product. Since 1978, they've had an investment tax credit, which was sunset, but it still has an extension for 10 years. But they've had an investment tax credit for the renewable energy industry, which was up to 30% the last time it was renewed.
Wow.
Solar energy in particular no other renewable energy, but solar energy has an 80% property tax exemption in North Carolina. They're only paying 20% of the property tax they owe in North Carolina. And on top of all of that, there was a policy passed in 1978 by the Carter administration at the federal level called PURPA, which requires that if a renewable energy facility sets up in a state, so Mark, let's say you and I go in partnership and we set up a solar farm somewhere.
Okay.
The utility in that area has to take on that power capacity. They have no choice on it. They
really?
Have absolutely no choice on whether to take it on or not. And the state sets the contract rate. And so in a lot of states, they do 1 to 2, maybe even 5 years at kind of a variable rate. Some states do a fixed rate. But it's typically short-term contracts. North Carolina has the longest contracts in the country at 15 years at a fixed rate. So those four things combined, it is no shock that the Sustainable Energy people, the Renewable Energy Association, Conservatives for Clean Energy, and I'm using air quotes around conservative, are saying, hey, this brings in a lot of money and jobs. Well, they better be bringing in a lot of money and jobs. I think the shocking part is how few jobs they've actually been doing. And, there have been two academic studies and then one study by the Department of Environmental Quality that talk about, yes, there have been significant investment in North Carolina, due to all of these policies dealing with renewable energy, but the Department of Environmental Quality, a state government study, says that, you know what, these policies may have actually killed more jobs than they're bringing in. And I think that's the kicker there. We're not denying they have brought in jobs, but have they killed more jobs in other parts of the economy than they brought into our state?
Wow. So, yeah, that makes things a lot more clear in understanding. And, I've written about this. You and I have talked about this. I just keep coming back to the question, Donald, if the renewable industry is so, so fantastic and so strong, why can't they stand on their own without all of the government help? And people say, well, the fossil fuel industry gets this and that. But the fact of the matter is, I personally don't believe that if these mandates weren't in place and if these tax credits and tax exemptions weren't in place, I don't know how long this industry would stand on its own.
Well, I mean, they're right in that, yes, fossil fuels receive subsidies, and they shouldn't receive subsidies. No, nobody should receive subsidies, and once we start getting subsidies out of the way, we'll be able to figure out what the market signals are and figure out actually what least cost energy is. That's what we should be providing, is reliable and affordable energy to North Carolina families. But if you actually want to talk about the subsidies, one, the state of North Carolina provides zero subsidies or mandates for fossil fuels.
Right.
Zero. It's only renewable energy that does. The second part is, even at the federal level, per kilowatt hour, you're talking about pennies on the dollar that coal and oil are getting to produce energy in subsidies, where it's somewhere around $700 or $800 per kilowatt hour that solar and wind, for instance, are getting in subsidies. So if you look at the power produced, renewables far and away outweigh. I hope they become a sustainable industry. I hope, whatever brings, reliable and affordable energy to North Carolina and helps out North Carolina families. But, if they're so sustainable and they're bringing in so many jobs, great. Sounds like they stand on their own 2 feet within the mandates and in the subsidies.
Yeah, that's my position. Well, Donald, thank you very much for making this a lot more understandable. So last thing, Representative Millicent Collins, they want to freeze the renewable energy portfolio standard at 6%. Representative Dixon was on our program a while back. His bill would have freeze it, I think, at 8.5% or 8%. And he wants to do away with the property tax exemption.
That's right.
So why?
Both those are headed in the right direction.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, and you may not know, but seems like a duplication of effort with Representative Collins and Millis. Maybe they could have just amended Dixon's bill, or maybe he wasn't open to that. Or which of these two bills, in your gut, do you think, might have a better chance of passing? Because we do have a history in the General Assembly of resistance when it comes to changing some of
right.
these things.
Well, I mean, Representative Dixon's bill has House Majority Leader John Bell on as co-sponsor, and so just the sheer weight of the legislators on that bill probably make it more likely. As far as which one is actually probably a more conservative approach to energy, that's probably Representative Millicent Collins' bill.
Right.
That, you know, they're freezing the mandate at 6% instead of 8%. They eliminate the property tax altogether as opposed to just reduce it, or the property tax exemption altogether as opposed to reducing it, which is what Bell and Dixon do. But they also, and this is probably the critical part that people don't understand, is changing those standard contracts through that federal legislation that we talked about is vital. And Representative Millicent's bill does that and changes it from to that 15 years at a fixed rate, changes it down to two-year contracts at a variable rate. And that actually really, really will help ratepayers in the long run.
Okay. Well, I'm with you. Whatever, whether they're using solar energy or fossil fuel, it doesn't matter to me, as long as we're getting North Carolina ratepayers are getting the best bang for their buck, and they're not having to you know, pay excessively because of government assistance. I think we
all
agree that's what we'd like to see.
Yes, sir. No, that's exactly right. And that's not anything bad about Representative Dixon's bill. It's a good bill. You know, if I had to choose one or the other, I would go with the Millis bill. But, you know, I'm really happy that Representative Dixon is headed in that direction.
Well, he told me, Donald, he said, if I'd have been here, Senate Bill 3 wouldn't have got my vote. So he's definitely not on board with all these government subsidies and stuff. So, Donald, thank you. Kind of a spur of the moment, but we wanted to get you on to kind of bring a local voice to this conversation we had with Landon Stevens. So thank you very much. We appreciate it, as always.
Thank you, sir. Really appreciate it. Always a pleasure.
All right. Well, that's a nice way to close out our Friday here on What Matters in North Carolina. Landon Stevens, our first guest, talking, of course, about the study that Utah State University did, found that North Carolina's renewable energy portfolio standards have led to a loss of income in our state and a net loss of jobs. And, of course, the folks on the renewable energy side of the equation say, no, wait a minute, look at all the jobs we've created and all the money we've made. And so wanted to bring in Donald Bryson of Americans for Prosperity, good friend of our program. Obviously, he's their state director, and he kind of blew some of the smoke out of the way and clarified things. And I'm with Donald. You know, it doesn't matter. I'm not against solar energy. But I just question always, you know, you guys tout this stuff as so awesome. Okay, well, quit making companies like Duke have to buy your product. That's what a renewable energy portfolio says. They have to buy a certain percentage of their energy from solar or other renewable resources. Okay, if you're so strong, then get away from that and let Duke buy their energy, their electricity, from wherever they want to. And quit passing the cost along to me and the millions of other North Carolina citizens that have to pay extra because our electricity providers have to buy their electricity from renewable sources. It's pretty simple. Like Donald said, and I agree, whatever is best for the North Carolina citizens, the ratepayers, that's what we're all about, you know, because I'm just not a big fan of government subsidies for these types of things. Property tax exclusions for the land that these solar facilities are on. Wow, what a deal. Is it any wonder that they can say, oh, look at the growth in the industry? Well, when you don't have some of the tax burdens that other industries have, it's a big leg up on the competition. Anyway, I feel great about the way we've closed out the week here on What Matters in North Carolina. We have had certainly a very interesting and very intriguing week as far as I'm concerned, and I hope you have enjoyed all of our guests. We've hit a variety of topics, as you know. Yesterday, we talked with Lieutenant General Daniel Bolger all about the war on terror and, man, some of the stuff he said about how things are just not as prepared as well as they should be from his position as a general, kind of curls your hair a little bit. Go back and listen to that if you missed that. You can find it at freedomactionnetwork.com. Also, a delightful conversation Wednesday with Dr. Sarah Stoneburner. She talked about how ophthalmologists don't think that House Bill 36, which would expand advanced eye care procedures to optometrists, she doesn't think that's a good idea. Ophthalmologists don't think that's a good idea from a patient safety standpoint. And then Tuesday, we were joined by Representative Burt Jones. He's just a great, great person of integrity. He's a man of faith. We talked about his faith. We talked about his House Bill 728, which would require all UNC system universities to withdraw from the ACC should they decide to bully the state and boycott the state by withdrawing games over legislation they find disagreeable. And then Monday, can you remember back to Monday? Wow, that seems like a long time ago. We talked with the chairman of the North Carolina Republican Party, Robin Hayes. So you can find all of this week's excellent, excellent podcasts at freedomactionnetwork.com. We're also in the iTunes and Google Play stores. And by the way, you don't want to miss this. Coming up on Monday, we're going to give you the other side of House Bill 36. We're going to talk with one of the past presidents of the North Carolina Optometric Society. And they're going to answer all of the stuff that the ophthalmologist said about safety and training and all of this stuff. So I'm looking forward to that because we want to give you all the information that you can on things that matter in North Carolina. Thank you so much for listening. As always, we appreciate it. Hope you have a fantastic weekend. I'm Mark Shiver. Thanks for listening to What Matters in North Carolina.